The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
For this morning's Dharma talk, to introduce it, I would like to begin with a short guided meditation, probably 4 or 5 minutes, and so that you could experience something about what I'm going to talk about. So, arrange yourself in a comfortable, upright posture. Softly close your eyes. And gently turn your attention inward to experience your body from the inside. And from within your body, you might take a few long, slow, deep breaths, kind of like being massaged from the inside out, stretching the rib cage, the shoulders lift. And as you exhale, relaxing, settling in for a few minutes here. And then letting yourself breathe normally. Perhaps tuning in to some inner sense of quiet or stillness, if it's available. And in that inner stillness or quiet, breathing mindfully. And so what this guiding is going to be about is a simple exploration of your thinking. And so perhaps you'll be thinking as part of this. And the first question for you is, do you think more in words or more in images? Are you a visual thinker or a verbal thinker? Some people are more one than the other. Some people do both. Which is your strongest tendency? If you think in words, do you hear those words? Or do you, in your head someplace, or do you see them as texts? And if you're able to identify what kind of thinking you have, can you notice the location of that thinking? So if you think in words and you hear the inner voice speak, is there a location in your body where you hear those words, where the words are spoken? Or if you think in images, is there a place that those images appear in the mind's eye, where they're projected? where people have trouble finding a location where thinking occurs. I sometimes will ask, is it happening in your foot or in your kneecap or in your little finger? And sometimes those simple questions helps kind of narrow the area. And if you do experience it in your head or your heart, is it in the front of your head, the back, on the sides? Does it feel like it's deep in your torso or in the front or the back? And if you're able to find more or less a location where thinking is experienced, spend the next few moments being aware of thinking happening in that location. Kind of like if you have been absorbed in a movie, watching a movie, and maybe the person near you chews the popcorn loudly or gets up to leave. And you wake up and you realize, wait, I'm sitting in a movie theater and you're no longer absorbed in the story. And you can kind of look around and you see the lights flashing on the screen. And you realize there's no real people up there. It's just a light flashing. The same way, can you step back? Can you wake up from the story, the content of your thinking, and realize that it's just a particular way in which your neurons are firing. Just an image, it's just some words. Step back from your thinking, not be absorbed in it or involved in the content. Step back and just from notice where it's happening and step back from it. See it as just something happening there. So one more thing, there may be the usual place, usual way you have of thinking, discursive thinking. And perhaps you can be aware that that which knows, the way that you know that you're thinking, that knowing is a quieter kind of knowing, a quieter kind of thinking. Or a stiller way of thinking than the images or the inner voice. So then to end this little exercise, you can take a couple of deep breaths. When you're ready, you can open your eyes. So then I want to follow that by saying something provocative. If thinking is optional, why think? If thinking is optional, why think? So that's provocative maybe in a few different ways. One is maybe it's never occurred to you that thinking is optional. And it, or maybe even more so, it's inconceivable. You cannot think. There's no way you can conceive of the idea that you could not think. And because it's inconceivable not to think, it's inconceivable that you would ask, why think? Maybe I'm not supposed to bother thinking. I'm supposed to just turn it off and do something else. What else is there to do for the mind that the mind does? I mean, it's just like a constant companion, the thinking. It's just, that's what the mind does. It thinks. That's what I do. I am my thinking. If I don't think, then who am I? If I don't think, I'm not here. I gotta think. How would I know anything if I don't think? How would I fix my life problems if I don't think? Since I always have a problem, I'd better always be thinking. Meditation begins putting a question mark around the whole topic, the whole experience of being a thinker. And one of the ways it does it is occasionally in meditation, the mind gets really quiet, and thinking might not stop, but you're no longer so interested in the thoughts. And you realize there's a difference between thinking with interest, with involvement, with engagement, and thinking without particular interest. There's more interesting things to do. So, for example, I mean, an analogy for this would be to go into a very crowded room with a lot of people, and mostly maybe what you're aware of is the people and the crowd and figuring out how to get through the crowd. But if you go into a very, very big vaulted cathedral or vaulted, you know, grotto, you know, big cave or something really majestic and beautiful and big, And there are people there, but they're spread out and widely spaced. Then you can become aware of the space, the spaciousness, the vastness, the scope of it. And it might actually be more interesting to look at the big open space than it is to fixate on the people. Whereas if you have to get through this crowded little place with a lot of people, you know, you focus on the people, you don't notice the space so much. So in the same way with thinking, we can get claustrophobic with our thoughts and so involved with our thoughts, and that's all we focus on is what we're thinking, what we're seeing. But as the mind gets quieter, we start becoming aware of there's space in the mind, there's stillness in the mind, there's experiences of sensory pleasure that can well up in the body, there's experiences of different emotions that can be there, and there's other things going on in the picture than just what we're thinking about. And it's a remarkable thing for some people to step back from the discursive thinking and not be so involved in it. And for some people, it's a revolutionary. It's kind of a revolution in their mind. It's a revolution in the mind if kind of the only thing a person really kind of knew to do was to be involved and think and figure out and be involved in that. And so to step away from it. So there are other things to do besides think. And if in the gaps between thinking, when your thinking becomes, discursive thinking becomes quiet, you don't die, you don't disappear. In fact, one of the nice things to discover is that the quieting down of discursive thoughts tends to make us happier. Because discursive thinking has a lot to do with the stories we tell ourselves. Those stories and those ideas and those commentary we make is often the source of our stress. Many of us are not really the best storytellers. We didn't learn the best stories to tell ourselves, and so we tell ourselves stories about who I am, and we tell ourselves stories about who other people are. We tell ourselves stories of what's happening or what needs to happen or what did happen, and sometimes those stories come with value judgments about ourselves, what we need, what has to happen, what our problems are, and all that. There was someone, I don't know who it was, it's some famous person who made this remarkable statement. I've had many problems in my life, many troubles in my life, most of which never happened. Mark Twain said that. And, you know, because we have this tremendous capacity to think. And one of the functions of thinking is to project into the future, is to think in imaginary. You know, we have to predict the future, predict what's happening, and to some degree to kind of get around in life. And that predictive aspect of the mind has ability to predict all kinds of dire possible futures. And, you know, this is terrible things are going to happen, are waiting. And there can be an underlying anxiety that fuels the thinking, and it kind of like colors it as if something unknown, dire, terrible is going to happen. And so we plan and think the future. And those stories about the future, the imagination, then feed back on us and create more anxiety and becomes this wonderful loop. And discursive thinking has sometimes a tendency to create these wonderful loops of stressful ways of thinking. And they can come with great authority. The discursive mind that thinks a lot can seem extremely important. It's where we, you know, we solve our life, we understand our life, it's where we understand ourselves, who we are. We give it a lot of authority, but that authority sometimes is misplaced. Certainly thinking is an important part of human life. I have a lot of respect for it. I do it a lot with delight. I enjoy my thinking. But the thinking mind isn't necessarily the wisest part of you. And so if you completely invest authority into whatever you think, your chances are most of you will get in trouble because your thoughts sometimes are assumptions and guesses and judgments that might not be true of what goes on. And so it's interesting to study our thinking, to be aware of thoughts. The study of stepping away and looking back at them. Kind of like you, is that you have them being in a movie theater and stepping away and realizing that you're no longer kind of absorbed in the story. It was so important what was happening, and, you know, will they get away? Will they get caught? Will she, he kiss each other? You know, what's going to happen? You're there, like, and then, you know, the person next to you decides to get up and leave the theater, and you just stand up and let the person go by, and you realize, you know, where am I? I'm in a movie theater. And, you know, it's like there's lights and there's people around me and it's kind of curious and you hear the popcorn chewing. And we know, if you think about it, most of us know, I think, that there's absolutely no movement happening on the movie screen. What it is a continuous flashing of still photos, still shots on the screen, one after the other, very rapidly. And we have the human mind has a constructive process, and it constructs these individual images into movement for us. And so we see movement that's not there. So you're not even seeing accurately. And so to kind of sit in the movie and kind of think about that, and you're no longer with the chase scene. You're no longer with the drama because, you know, like there's another perspective in which to look at it. So the drama of our thinking, the stories we tell ourselves, to step out of it gives us a chance then to look back and see it in different ways. See it differently than just focusing on the content. And one of the things to notice is things like how interested we are in our thinking. How involved are we? Are we glued to it, or is there a lot of space and openness to it? Are we living in it? Do we live not only in it, do we live in it and through it? Is the way that we experience the world around us, does it happen through the filter, through the frame that our thoughts give us? Or are we aware that there's a thought, like you're looking at a person, you're aware there's a thought about the person, and you're aware they're seeing the person, and seeing the person's separate from the thought? Or is seeing the person through the thoughts themselves? And if there's no mindfulness, clear awareness of the thinking process, then our perception of the world gets confused with the thinkings we have. And so then we see sometimes erroneously because we see through what our interpretations are of the event, the stories we are telling us of the event. So to step back and be aware, just doing this mindfulness of awareness practice, mindfulness of thinking practice, is very helpful, a very significant support for people who go around the world thinking, which I assume is what human beings do. We're not human beings, we're human thinkers, more than anything else, for many times. And so to step back, step out of its allure, to see for what it is. And this is not supposed to be, it can be, some people are so addicted to their thinking, it's kind of inconceivable to pull back, or it's very disorienting to pull back. And sometimes this instruction to step back and look at your thinking, don't be involved in it, some people will take as being dismissive of thoughts. Wait a minute, these Buddhists are always kind of, saying things, wanting us to reject something. But in fact, the ability to step back and observe the process of thinking while it happens. So for example, if you're thinking about the past, to step back and know, thinking about, to clearly, fully be aware, thinking about the past is happening in the present. Right here and now, I'm thinking about the past, as opposed to being in the past because you're kind of so absorbed in the story. So if you have that kind of clarity, you really see yourself, see the thinking, the thoughts occurring, it's kind of like observing a miracle. It's kind of awesome. It's an amazing thing that this universe has these biped beings that can have these amazingly complex processing systems that result in having thoughts and having images. It's a, I don't think they have computers that are sophisticated enough yet to do what our minds do, to produce a thought, to produce a memory. A lot of processing power goes into that. We're taking in a tremendous amount of data, organizing it, and regurgitating it, bringing it up into the active memory where we can kind of see or hear or the image and ideas, and relate it to the world around us and the past and the future. It's a pretty amazingly complex thing. Even something as simple as, if I have a thought, this is a glass of water and it'd be nice to drink it, that's a pretty innocent, simple thought. It's a pretty awesome thing to have happen. So to step back and not to reject thoughts, but to be amazed by them. And even if you have the most, the world's certified most awful thought, no one's ever had more awful thought than you've managed to produce, it's still pretty amazing. And to be in kind of an awe, wow, as opposed to, oh no, how could I have thought that? Instead of kind of being caught up in the story and the meaning, wow, isn't this amazing that even such things exist, a thought like this? So this kind of sense of awe can also be a great help from, again, being locked into the thoughts and believing them and being under their sway and under their authority. And so to look at the thoughts, to be present for them. And so some people find it helpful to explore this question, where's the location of thinking? Some people have never occurred to them to go look at that. And it's kind of like a little eye-opening. What, there's a place? And then if I look at it and recognize it's happening in that place, kind of, in that location. So is that true for some of you? were some of you able to find the location for where you tend to think? I see some heads nodding. Would anybody like to share the location? So maybe we can hear some of the variations, varieties. If you can use the mic, please. So you thought you were thinking around your jaw, and then you felt no, it's not. Thinking's not there. There's just tension there. Did you relax your tension?
Yeah, when I realized that every time I was having a thought, I was contracting my jaw.
Every time you had a thought, you were contracting your jaw. Sometimes I have this feeling that thinking has these tentacles that spreads out into the body, and depending what we're thinking, and who knows all the different factors, it kind of pulls on the muscles in different places in our body. And jaws are one place, shoulders, belly, you know, eyes, different places, tentacles. Sometimes you can feel, you know, pulling in that goes on. Great, thank you. Someone else?
I noticed that sort of some text was just kind of flying up from behind my eyelids.
Text were flying up.
I was even looking at like, okay, so what font is that?
Great. So I think that's a kind of what the combination of words and images, right? Some people see more in text, so they float away. It's kind of like, is that like, you know, Star Wars, where those texts kind of, those words kind of... You can pass the other mic. Someone near that other mic want to pick it up so we can be ready for the next one. You're welcome.
So for me, it depends on what it is that I am writing, but I was realizing the other day that I have a movie about 2 feet in front of my face, and I look at the movie, I watch it, and then I write it down.
So it's 2 feet in front of your face. And how many of you have movies or images that appear in front of you? Okay. And so some of you, how close are they to you? Are they 2 feet away, or how far are they? What's the different kinds of, just say loudly.
Really close.
So like 3 inches away? 4 inches away?
A foot away.
Oh, your images are inside, really close, okay. Are they kind of just behind your forehead or in the back of the head? Behind your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Between the ears.
Between the ears, so it's even further back. You have to pay more for that, those seats.
I was actually writing something the other day, and I was so absorbed in what I was doing, and I was writing a scene that took place at night. And when I looked up, I was actually shocked to see that it was daylight outside.
I live with
it. I hope you're in her movie sometimes.
I'm afraid of that.
I see images predominantly on the in front of me, about 2-3 feet of me on the top left-hand side here. And actually, it's so predominant that I have noticed that. So I have consciously tried to shift it to the right-hand side. And because I don't want one side of my brain to be dominating the other side. So I've been trying to do that lately.
Very
so
interesting.
I don't know what that means.
Very interesting. How many of you who saw images saw a little bit more on one side than the other side? So a few of you. And which side was it? Either. That was the right side for you and
left.
Left. Hmm?
Left.
Left. Right for you.
I actually see different images. In the left, like when I'm looking, when I'm meditating, and it's dark. Yeah. The black on the right looks different than the black on the left.
Oh, interesting. So what about those of you who think in words? Where's that located? Those locations in different ones of you. So, Mike, do you have a mic over?
The forms that I see, I put on paper.
You put them on paper. Nice.
I have a conversation, but it also involves up here. But like, you know, there's a leaning in, sort of like when you're having an intense conversation. There's a feeling of being leaned in. It's like, you know this and this.
So you have it. The words, the conversations happen a little bit on your left side, upper forehead.
But I'd be pulled into this,
and you're involved. You're leaning into it. There's pressure there. That's part of it. That's great. Just no. Heather, yes. Oh, fascinating. I think it's quiet. Is that enjoyable, that quiet?
It's an improvement.
So here, pass it to your left.
Yeah,
I had the curious experience of when I hear equally out of both ears to the best of my knowledge, but in this exercise, if the thought was more evaluative and perhaps with a tinge of judgment, I heard it on the left side exclusively. And if the thought was open, expansive, I saw image, but on equally on both sides, just interior to the forehead.
Mm, interesting. Thank you. So maybe hit a couple of more. Yes, please.
When I get hooked to a thought, especially like a worry or fear, my thoughts usually are mostly images. And then when I see that hook, I see that hook, there are words explaining, there's then the script of the image, and everything happens in the back.
Mm. Great. That's nice to hear. Please.
It's sound, but it feels like it's around right on the very top of the head.
Uh-huh.
And it could be influenced by what I've heard lately, and it'll pick up an accent. and I seem to lately have an addiction to Mrs. Hughes from Downton Abbey.
So one more, please, Jim.
Can you hear me? I experienced the vision part or the visible parts separately, like behind my eyes. The oral is more at the top of my throat, behind my mouth, but the emotional impact of those is often different. Especially, I think of my late wife, the visual seems to somehow get hooked on the negative parts, and the oral, especially if I'm thinking and talking that I'm talking about it, or I'm rehearsing saying something about her or my loss, that brings on the pain and the positive things that I've lost.
So there's a whole universe. So thinking is three-dimensional, maybe multi-dimensional, and many times we live in a two-dimensional relationship to it, because we live in just the content, the story, the ideas, the content of what we think or what we see. And now from this, you get a sense there's more to discover in this world. So you can be aware of the location. Some of you probably never really looked at this before until today. And so what happens, so that one of the things that's available, possible then, if you have a location, is start noticing what are the sensations that are there in that location. So the one person said she leans in that direction, some pressure there. Sometimes it's not uncommon to, in that location where thinking occurs, to actually feel pressure or a lot of energy or agitation or tension or tightness sometimes. It's also possible to then become aware of things like the tone of the voice, apparently the accent. And sometimes people report that you ask, whose voice is that even? They'll say, oh, you know, it's that strict teacher I had in third grade. I didn't know or a parent's voice, because we sometimes internalize these voices that we hear. And some voices have more authority or power. They more stick more than other voices. And and then what comes along with a voice is the tone of voice, so it comes along with certain emotional qualities and biases even. So some of you pointed out that certain kinds of ways of thinking or seeing come with different kinds of emotionality or different evaluations of the situation. And so it begins to kind of fill out the picture of what's going on. And you start having a much wiser relationship to yourself as a thinker if you see the multidimensional aspect of what thinking is involved. And as we begin to see more and more what's going on, that seeing or that awareness of it helps us to be a little bit freer from being glued to the content. And when we're glued to the content, thinking can be self-perpetuating, especially like if you have some anxiety or upset about something, sometimes it's very hard to get out of the loop. We're kind of just going around and around in circles. The image I like to think of is that of a little kitten chasing its own tail. You know, just kind of you're going around and around, and you just can't stop thinking about what we're thinking about. We're kind of caught in. And so sometimes we need to do something. I don't know if we need to, but sometimes it's helpful to do something that we step out of the loop. And so some people do things like exercise or take a shower or read a book or watch a movie or do something to distract you from what you're thinking about, so to break the self-perpetuating cycles. Meditation can also be used for that, where you calm down, you step away, you start being mindful of it rather than being it, and it's a way of stepping away from the loop. One of the interesting things to notice about thinking is that thinking, it's maybe obvious when I say it, thinking is an activity of the mind. And it's a particular process, mental process that's going on. And it's probably a series of different kinds of processes going on. And that's why some people, or sometimes we see in images, sometimes in words, because different processes are being activated. I don't know much about this, but it's possible that verbal thinking tends more to come from the left hemisphere, and that verbal thinking tends to come more from the right hemisphere. And since there are differences in how these left and right hemispheres process our world, it might have impact the kind of way in which we relate to the world, depending which side gets predominance. Nothing wrong with having one predominant than the other, I would say, but it's really important to see and to know what we're doing so we can monitor it and be wise about it. And so there are mental processes going on. There are activities of mind going on. So if someone, let's say someone is pacing in circles, they're pacing and pacing and pacing and pacing, and you're standing near them and they're pacing and pacing and pacing, and they say to you, "Boy, am I ever tired, I'm exhausted." This is tiring, and they go on, say on and on and off, and finally you've heard it enough, you know, you say, "Excuse me." You know, maybe you'd be okay if there's a chair there. It'd be okay if you sat down. And so they sit down, and they're happy to sit there for a long time, and they sit there for a long time. But then they get really, really tired and sleepy, and it's a lot of work to sit up straight in the chair. And right next to them is a bed. And they complain, "Oh, you know, it's so tired, it's so hard to sit up." And you say, "Well, you know, you could go lay down. There's a bed right there." And, "Oh, this is much better laying down." So the same thing with the mind. Our mind paces and paces and paces. We don't have to do it. It's okay to let the mind sit down. And then even sitting down takes some effort. It feels pretty good at first. And it's okay to let the mind lay down. This analogy I'm trying to say is that it's okay to quiet. These activities of thinking are not necessary to do all the time. We don't have to do it as actively and fully. We can quiet it. We can quiet it. We can put it to rest. There are different layers of kinds of thinking that we do. There's very kind of coarse, discursive thinking. There's very simple kind of commentary of just kind of recognizing what's happening in the present moment in a kind of, you know, the bigger picture of the present moment. And there's more and more simple kind of thinking that goes on. And some of the more simpler, deeper kind of thinking we do is very smooth, very quiet, very kind of effortless to do. Whereas some of the big discursive thinking can seem effortless until you step back and look at it. And you realize you're exhausted. You know, one of the things to discover by finding the location of thinking is that that place is exhausted. It's been doing it for a long time. So weary of going on and on and on with it. And so to learn to put out to rest. So the provocative statement now at the beginning was, if thinking is optional, why think? So that's your question for the week. Carry that question with you and think about it. And more than think about it, think those thoughts. If thinking is optional, why think? And then kind of feel your way or sense your way or for an answer, just beyond that. Is there an answer to that question that comes to you that's not a thought itself? What would that be? So, and then, I think it's a good topic. So if you find this interesting or provocative during this coming week, see if you can find friends, family, and total strangers that you can that you can engage in a conversation about thinking, the process of thinking, what they know about it, or you know, you heard this crazy thought talk on Sunday morning, and you know, can you tell your friend, stranger, a little bit about it? What do you think of this? And the guy said, thinking is optional. And then he asked, why think? And they'll look at you and say, I bet it's part of a cult. Be careful with that guy. So then you'll have to deal with that. I hope that was nice. I hope that was opens a new vista of exploration for you. And since we do have our tea today, I would like to ask you to turn to the person next to you and introduce yourself for a moment. And especially if the person's new, if you find out they're new here, please, and you're not new, even if you just came last time, welcome the new person. Thank you.